Mary, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things.
That's Jimmy Stewart as George Bailey, of course, in It's a Wonderful Life. And things don't quite work out the way young George is hoping that they will. And a lot of things about the movie didn't go as originally planned either. Our next guest shares some of the stories behind the classic holiday movie as people settle in to watch it maybe over the next week. Jennifer Wood is senior editor at mentalfloss.com, and her piece 25 Wonderful Facts About It's a Wonderful Life is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, this movie, it's a really big deal now. Everyone's heard about it. It's a classic. But it wasn't a big hit when it came out, was it?
No, and that's actually kind of the funniest part of the film is that when it was released in 1946, it was a bit of a bomb at the box office. It did receive a number of Oscar nominations. It did not win any of them. But it wasn't until about 30 years later that it really became a classic. And the reason that happened was because the copyright on the film lapsed, meaning that any television station that wanted to show the movie could do so without having to pay royalties. So anyone, and that happened in about 1974. So from 1974 to 1994, you know, anyone that grew up or watched television during that time would see it almost on a loop during
right.
the holiday.
There was that period where it seemed ubiquitous. Every time, as you said, you turned on the TV, there it was. And then all of a sudden, pop, it was gone.
Exactly. And that's because in 1994, they got the rights, the copyrights back, so that people actually had to start paying now to show the movie again.
Well, going back to the very beginning, what was the original inspiration for the movie?
It's actually a really interesting inspiration. It started, I guess the best way would be to call it a Christmas card. It was almost more like a Christmas newsletter. There was a writer named Philip Van Doren Stern who had written a short story called The Greatest Gift. And he'd sent it for years. He actually tried shopping it to publishers with zero success in doing that. So one year for Christmas, he just decided that, you know, hey, this isn't out there on the market yet. So he actually gifted it to some of his closest friends and family members for the holidays. I think he printed up about 200 copies of the story and sent them out as part of a very large Christmas card for the year. And it just so happened to get into the hands of a film producer at RKO Pictures who read it, loved it, and purchased the movie rights to it for about $10,000 at the time.
Wow, it's kind of a fairy tale story for the person who wrote it. Somehow it finds its way into the hands of a film producer and goes on to become this beloved classic. But it apparently changed a lot in its iterations as it went through screenwriters, right?
It did, and it actually has, if you look at it, I mean, a lot of movies these days, you'll see a number of writers on it. But in my opinion, at least, it's kind of what makes the movie, you know, we look at that movie and always think, oh, it's this very sentimental, you know, really sweet movie. And really, there's a very cynical and dark side to it. And I think some of that you could attribute to the number of writers who did work on the film over the years. Originally, when RKO purchased the rights, the plan was to have Cary Grant star in it. And they tried to make that work for a little while. And then in 1945, Frank Capra actually bought the rights to it and immediately brought Jimmy Stewart on to star in the movie. But over the course of its production, you know, they had more than half a dozen people took turns at kind of tweaking parts of the screenplay, including Dorothy Parker, Dalton Trumbo. So they had really, you know, typical screenwriters, and they had very well-known writers at the time who all added a little bit of their own, you know, their own voice to the script. And I think that's to a large degree, why it is such like sort of a layered and complex movie when you look at it, really.
Well, we're learning some little-known facts about the holiday classic It's a Wonderful Life with Jennifer Wood from mentalfloss.com. And here's something that was really surprising to me. This was, you know, it's a winter movie. There's falling snow, but it was filmed in the summer.
Yes, such is the trouble, I guess, sometimes when you're filming a movie. They filmed it not only in the summer, but in the midst of a heat wave. So eagle-eyed viewers watching the movie might notice at certain points that Jimmy Stewart happens to be sweating a little bit. And that's because he's all bundled up and in the middle of the summer, in the middle of a heat wave. So they did have to sort of, you know, make accommodations for that, do shorter shoots, stop a little bit. But yes, and at the same time, they needed snow, clearly, which is its own character almost in the film.
Right, and the snow is really well done. I watched this recently, and I thought the snow looks surprisingly realistic. It's kind of impressive for the time.
It is, and Capra, who actually trained as an engineer, he sort of was an engineer before he got into filmmaking. At the time, usually snow was painted cornflakes, was kind of the most common thing that you'd use for fake snow. So he actually engineered a new way of creating fake snow, and essentially it's what you'd find, it's fomite, so what you'd find in a fire extinguisher. He mixed it with sugar and water, and then he created snow.
Wow. Well, it sounds like there is a little bit of maybe grappling for the title of where the real Bedford falls in, but there's a town in New York that might be the one. So is this a real town, Bedford Falls?
Bedford Falls itself is not is a fictional town. It was built, you know, on a set. But there's a town in New York, Seneca Falls, it's called, and they actually dub themselves the real Bedford Falls. And, you know, if you can actually go onto their website, which I believe is actually therealbedfordfalls.com, and, you know, they have photos showing you what the town looks like and kind of seeing that, like, oh, yeah, this looks familiar, anyone who's seen the movie. But each year, it's really kind of a charming little event they do is they, throughout the month of December, they just have a really jam-packed calendar of holiday-themed events that they do, lightings and, you know, screenings of the movie, and a lot of times they'll get people who participated in the movie to come and share stories of it. So, you know, they take that title very seriously and really make a major event out of it, and people come from all over each year to visit the town and their holiday celebration.
Now, sometimes when there's a big cultural hit like this that everybody likes and watches over the years, you hear later that the people who are actually in the movie, the stars, didn't actually like it. How do the key players feel about this one?
Oddly, actually, Capra, Stewart, and Reed have all at different times, and not sitting down together, but all at different times have said that it's the favorite movie that they've ever made. So they all really, you know, loved the experience and loved the final result, more importantly.
And there's some little details, you know, as you watch it, there are these little nuggets that have caused speculation over the years. One of these is there's a police officer and a cab driver named Bert and Ernie in the
Bert
movie.
And
you got to go, hey, Bert and Ernie, is there any connection there?
Yes, and that's actually been asked, I think, many, many times over the years. And a person that worked very closely with Jim Henson for many years said that, you know, swore that he said we'd never had a conversation about it directly. It had obviously been brought up on a few occasions. But he said that one of the things of all Jim Henson's many talents, he said that his memory for something like that is not something that was he would not have remembered that those were the two names. So people close to Henson swear that that was completely coincidental. But a fun little thing to see when you're watching the movie.
And of course, the natural question here is there going to be a sequel to this thing or a reboot? Have you heard anything about that?
Well, in, I guess it was 2013, there were a couple of producers who, you know, made a big announcement that they'd be continuing the story with a sequel. And I think they were going to call it, you know, The Rest of the Story or something like that, which had been planned for a release this year. In very short order, Paramount, who owns the rights to the film, you know, stepped in, said, no, this is not happening. That they would need, you know, to purchase the rights, and that you know, without a license from Paramount, no sequel would ever happen, and that, you know, they were not interested in seeing that happen. So people have announced it, but the likelihood of that ever happening, I don't think is very likely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about all these things today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Jennifer Wood. She is a senior editor at mentalfloss.com, and she shared facts about It's a Wonderful Life in her article, which you'll find linked on the Central Time Facebook page.